All right, welcome back to another exciting adventure here on Radio Wasteland, the best in paranormal talk radio. I'm your host, Chauncey Hallworth. This is my co-host, Kara Kittrick.
Hello.
Kara, you got any news for us today?
Yes, I do. So first off, I have a story that's from May. So not that current, but it's really funny to me and I want to share. Will Carroll, the drummer for the thrash metal band Death Angel, opened up about the intense dreams he had of meeting Satan while in a medically induced coma during treatment for COVID, saying, quote, "I'm still going to listen to satanic metal, but I don't think Satan's quite as cool as I used to." Apparently, he, quote, "saw himself leave his body and plummet down to hell, where Satan, a woman in this case, punished him for the deadly sin of sloth, morphing him into a Jabba the Hutt-type creature who vomited blood until he had a heart attack." So, it just goes to show, never meet your heroes. A recording has surfaced relating to a 47-year-old alien abduction case in Pascagoula, Mississippi. On October 11, 1973, two men, Calvin Parker and Charles Hickson, contacted the sheriff's department claiming to have been abducted that night while fishing at a nearby river. This recording is apparently of what they told the sheriff that night. Apparently an officer who was present recently gave the recordings to Parker, who didn't know at the time that he'd even been recorded. It includes not just the interview, but the two men apparently terrified out of their minds, trying to console each other and panicking that the aliens would take them again. Parker, who was 18 years old at the time, wrote a book in 2018 about his abduction experience. And finally, astronomers have spotted, quote, "strange circular objects deep in space that do not seem to correspond to any known type of object." The objects, called odd radio circles, were spotted by new types of radio telescopes, the Australian Square Kilometer Array Pathfinder, and were noticed by researchers doing a pilot survey for the Evolutionary Map of the Universe project. The objects show up in radio wavelengths, but cannot be seen in visible infrared or X-ray light spectrums, which explains how they escaped our notice until late last year. Four such objects have been discovered, each highly circular, glowing at the edges, and appearing to be some distance away from our galaxy, although we don't know how far away or how large they are exactly. Some appear to have entire galaxies in the center, so we aren't talking about UFOs here. The preliminary hypothesis is that they are radio pulses or shock waves left behind by powerful events like gamma ray bursts. But if this is the case, there's a lot we still don't know about them. And finally, in conspiracy news, a new poll found 48% of Republicans found it to be definitely or probably true that, quote, "powerful people planned the coronavirus outbreak." Make of that what you will. Back to you, Chauncey.
All right. Let's cover both the coronas at once. You know,
a lot in there.
Death Angel meets Satan while in COVID coma. Okay, so last week you reported that there were crazy new symptoms that were basically the symptoms of getting old. So first we had the symptoms, then everybody saying, okay, it's like the flu. Then everybody says, okay, it's like you're dying. Then everybody says, okay, it's like you're getting old. Now they're saying it's like you've gone to hell, turned into Jabba the Hutt, and you're vomiting blood and having a heart attack. Like,
I mean, I feel like that's particular to him, since that was a punishment by Satan for his sins. So,
yeah,
like,
but it
you
doesn't
might
make
not
it any
be...
less funny.
Yeah, I think we shouldn't list that as an official symptom of COVID.
Yeah.
Because it's more a symptom of the deadly sin of sloth than a...
Well, you might as well list it. If somebody calls in and says, I've been turned into Jabba the Hutt and I'm vomiting blood, you should probably help them.
I mean, true, but he was in a different plane of reality, you know? His body was here on Earth on a ventilator, so...
Right. Oh, man, that is just so...
What could we have done?
Awesome, awesome metal story, you know? It's just so so perfect.
What's funny to me is that, like, you'd think a death metal guy would be like, yeah, I saw Satan and he told me I was totally rad. But no, it's like, oh, God, that was a terrible experience. I didn't like it.
Right. Oh, yeah, you know Satan.
That's what's funnier to me.
You know he listens to, like, Lawrence Welk and Muzak down there, you know, just terrible, like, like repetitive polka or something, just...
Yeah.
Destroying your ears at just insanely loud volumes. And then 48% of Republicans believe that the coronavirus was given to us on purpose.
Yeah.
Is that what they're saying?
Yeah. So just under half.
To sway the election, right?
Well, I mean, that wasn't part of the question. Hmm. It's a survey. They just asked whether they thought it was the case that, quote, powerful people planned the coronavirus outbreak. That's all that it is. So there's no... They didn't ask about motives or anything, but nonetheless, just under half of people think that it was planned by someone, which is, to me, still incredibly crazy.
Yeah, yeah. I mean, the idea I agree. I think it's just crazy. Now, do you think there's a statute of limitations on alien abductions? Because 47 years later seems like a long time.
Yeah, so
you think these aliens are off the hook, or you think still?
I feel like the aliens probably would enjoy some form of diplomatic immunity. Mm-hmm. Like, I think if we were to try to take them to task, then we would have to seriously consider, you know, whether we would be annoying the Arcturian Empire or whatever. We would have to take into account the intergalactic ramifications of.
Yeah, well,
this crime.
I gotta say, getting back to politics, I think diplomatic immunity is total BS. I don't think that should exist. You know, if you come to our country, you know, our reporters, they go to the Mideast and they have to wear little hats.
Yeah.
And that's fine. And I'm cool with that. You know, you go there, you gotta follow the stuff in order to get the story. You know, if you come here or you go to England from here and you run over some kid on a motorcycle, you should probably get in trouble.
Yeah, but, okay, here's a hypothetical. Let's say the American president goes to Russia and kills someone with his car by accident. Do the Russians then arrest the president and cause nuclear war, killing everyone on the planet?
Probably. Is that what you're asking? Probably, yeah.
I think they probably shouldn't. They should probably take a broader view of the situation.
Okay, maybe the bar for diplomatic immunity has to be a little bit higher.
Sure, I agree. I agree on that.
Let's keep it to five people from any given country at a time.
Okay. I'm just saying the concept of diplomatic immunity in absolute terms makes sense, I think. The way it's applied is often BS, like you said.
All right, well, you know, is the statute of limitations up for the alien abduction? That's what we want to know. If you got an answer, tell us about
yes.
it. All right, well, tonight we got a topic that we haven't had on too much, maybe covered it once or twice. You know, I realized off of Facebook today that I've been friends with Mark Slade for 3 years, meaning we're pushing our fourth year here on Radio Wasteland, and I want to say that we've covered serial killers once or twice, maybe three times. And tonight, we're covering it again in Fox Hollow, so come on back for Radio Wasteland.
Radio Wasteland comes to you from the Reading studios of Free Fire Radio, 96.5 FM and AM 1460. Visit Radio Wasteland at Instagram at instagram.com/Radio Wasteland.
All right, welcome back to Radio Wasteland, and our guest tonight is Richard Stepp. We're going to be talking about his new book, The Horrors of Fox Hollow Farm, Unraveling the History and Hauntings of a Serial Killer's Home. You know, this book title really is kind of covering everything that we're interested in, serial killers, paranormal, and everything, but Fox Hollow Farm was, I was talking to my wife about this, and she's kind of the true crime fiend, and she hadn't heard of this one, so I think we should probably start off with talking about what actually happened at Fox Hollow Farm, what the initial event was that sort of kicked all this off.
Absolutely. Well, it surprises me that Herb Baumeister, the I-70 Strangler, is one of those serial killers that most people have never heard of. You know, everyone knows Gacy, Dahmer, Bundy, people of that nature, but not Herb Baumeister. So the story is that Herb Baumeister was a married man, a family man, in Indiana. And he and his wife owned a chain of thrift stores, you know, discount stores, and made a pretty decent, prosperous living. Enough so that they could afford to buy this 17.5-acre property called Fox Hollow Farm out in Carmel, which is, you know, a rural part about 20, 30 minutes away from Indianapolis. So to all intents and purposes, you have the perfect American family here, you know, clean cut, fresh living, boy, girl, that kind of thing. But beneath the surface, Herb Baumeister was something very different. When his wife, Julie, would go take the kids to the lake for the weekend, Herb would hit the gay bars of Indianapolis, and he was well known there under the pseudonym Brian Smart. And he would look for a very specific type of man, preferably a younger one, anywhere between the late teens through the early to mid-30s at the oldest, and hopefully one that would not be missed. Because this is the early to mid-90s, you know, so there was a huge stigma to being a gay male or female in those days, and when people of that kind of nature disappeared, often too many questions weren't asked.
Right.
You know,
it seemed to be a common MO of the time.
Well, and yeah, very much so. And people just brushed it off when these guys would disappear. It was said, you know, oh, maybe they just moved on. They went to San Francisco. Or the most awful thing I heard was, you know, people would brush it off and say, oh, maybe they died of AIDS. Without actually, you know, looking into this too much. So Herb Baumeister was always looking for these men that would not be missed. Preferably no family, no loved ones, nobody to miss them. And what he would do, Fox Hollow Farm is unique. It's this mock Tudor farmhouse, large, large house, and has a basement with a swimming pool in it, which I've never really seen in another house. Hmm. And so what he would do, before he would go out of a weekend, he would crank up the heat on the pool to maximum temperature and put the pool cover across. So, you know, just like when you put a saucepan of hot water simmering on your range. And then he would go out and hit the town. He would find a young man and say, hey, my name's Brian Smart, and I'm working in construction, and I'm working on this great old house about, you know, a short drive from here, and they've got a pool. So how would you like to come back, have a few drinks, and party? And, you know, it wasn't a hard sell to some of these guys. So he would take them back to Fox Hollow Farm and take them downstairs, and the pool room has these large French doors which he would open up and let in the cool night air, and he would roll back the pool cover. So you get this very hot air rising from the pool, this influx of cold night air, and what does that give you? Steam.
Steam, yeah.
So this makes it a very disorienting environment. And to make this even weirder, Herb had put a whole bunch of mannequins, like shop, you know, storefront window mannequins, all dressed for a beach party. He put them all around the pool and in the wet bar next door as if there was a party going on. And so he would get the young man into the pool, and he would ply them with drink and drugs. There's the party that he promised them, and he would tell them that he knew a really cool trick. And he used to invite them to loop a length of the pool hose around his neck and slowly squeeze it as they would masturbate one another. And Herb says, this feels amazing. You know, we're talking about autoerotic asphyxiation. And then he would say, it's my turn. So here we go. And he would strangle his victim to death. And it's not known, there are some theories, it's not known whether he set out to do that the first time and accidentally killed someone, found out that he liked it. I don't think that's the case, and I'll talk about why that is in a short while. But he would kill them, strangle them to death, and then he would do whatever he chose with the corpse before dragging it out into the woods behind Fox Hollow Farm. And one of the stranger things about the murders, Fox Hollow was surrounded by very thick woods, and it is today, but it was much more isolated then, because now there are houses relatively close on either side. But back then, you moved out onto the back deck, and you saw nothing but trees. And so he would drag the bodies out there, and he would burn them, mulch them, cut them up, but what he never did was bury them. So those bodies were left to decompose, partially burned in some cases, in the woods behind Fox Hollow Farm. And he got away with this for years. It's believed that as many as 19 young men could have died at Fox Hollow. So many of the bones that were found were damaged, weather beaten, that it was impossible to trace how many. But the number of victims at Fox Hollow for sure is at least 10, possibly as many as 19.
Man, that is just crazy. So you said after he... Well, I guess I got a couple questions here. So the first one is, do we know if his MO evolved? In the case of a lot of serial killers, it sort of evolved over time, but I guess you suggested that maybe the first time was an accident and he discovered that he liked it. So that might be the case there. So as far as we know, this is the only way he killed people.
But you know, you'll notice that I told you that his nickname was the I-70 Strangler. Not the right. Fox Hollow Strangler.
Right.
The reason for that is this. Whenever a serial killer is caught, as I'm sure you know and I'm sure your viewers know, the police start looking through their files for unsolved murders in the vicinity, ones that fit the MO. It turns out that 9 or 10 young men were found killed along the interstate corridor in the area, always on weekends that Herb Baumeister was away on a business trip driving. And they were found strangled, dumped by the side of the road, or in some trees, in a state of undress, often with their pants around their ankles. Hmm. And so, because of the fact that the murders coincided with Herb's trips, something else that the police noticed, the murders stopped at the same time the Baumeisters bought Fox Hollow Farm.
I see.
Is that how they caught him eventually, or no? Here's
how they caught him. So you said you're it's Chauncey, is it?
Yes, Chauncey.
So you said you're married. You have a wife.
Yes.
So if you happen to be acting strangely, you know, I don't know what your wife would think, but it's pretty reasonable to assume she's not going to go. I do wonder if Chauncey is bringing men home and murdering them and putting them in the backyard. Nobody really starts out with
that. It's not what you jump to first, yeah.
Right.
I put exactly. The pickle jar on the wrong shelf, and she calls
yeah.
me. So.
Yeah.
There's so, you know,
it's a monster.
It's easy to see how this kind of escaped his wife's attention. The first real clue was when Herb's son is playing out in the woods behind Fox Hollow, and he finds a human skull.
Yeah. Ooh.
So, now bear in mind, he's got a sister. And any boy with a sister finds a skull, and this is a golden opportunity, right? So he goes to the house, gets a big broom handle, puts the skull on the stick, and puts it up to a bedroom window. Cue screaming, cue pandemonium, cue hilarity for him. And so Mom, of course, wants to know, where did you find this thing? So he leads her out into the woods, and Herb's wife sees bones. She sees lots of bones. And they look human. So... rather than call the police, she confronts Herb when he comes home from work that day, and he's very dismissive. He's like, oh, don't worry about it. Dad, who was a doctor, Herb said, that's Dad's medical school skeleton. You know, I threw that out into the woods. I'm sorry. I'll go get rid of it. The critters must have gotten into it. And she accepted this this explanation.
Yeah, it's a little improbable. But.
Well, I mean, you know, who knows, right?
Yeah, I mean, it's probably more probable than my husband has murdered 19 people, yeah. I guess.
He wants to believe that they're living with a serial yeah. killer.
And what year was this? I'm sorry. What year
so
was this?
So this is the mid-90s now.
Right, okay, so I guess it's possible that his dad's school skeleton could have actually been a real skeleton at that year.
It's theoretically possible, absolutely.
Yeah, okay.
And I totally see why she wouldn't necessarily open that whole can of worms, right? Mm.
When Black Bear Diner first opened, they filled the largest platters they could find. Not much has changed. Their legacy of huge portions continues today, and they've just introduced new diner deals. 6 new dinner combos and new homestyle side choices. Baby back ribs and tri-tip, chicken strips and tri-tip, chicken Alfredo, chicken and pesto, ribs and shrimp, and cod and shrimp. There is always plenty for your paws at Black Bear Diner at 2605 Hilltop Drive or order online at blackbeardiner.com.
Black Bear Diner.
I'm celebrating local heroes. Tune in the second Thursday each month at 6.05 p.m. right after the news for Heroes of the North State on North State Now. I'm Michelle Slade. During North State Now, we will speak with your neighbors, friends, family, and community members who give back, not to be recognized, but because it's the right thing to do. During these conversations, we will learn what truly makes our community and the people in it. Join me the second Thursday of each month at 6.05 p.m., right after the news, for Heroes of the North State on North State Now.
You're listening to Chauncey and Kara on Radio Wasteland right here on 96.5 FM and 1460 AM. That's Free Fire Radio. And don't forget to follow Radio Wasteland on Facebook at facebook.com/radiowasteland.us.
The Baumeister's marriage was kind of troubled. In fact, they were on the outs. What really got Herb nailed was he got careless, right? And this is the thing with almost all serial killers. They get away with it, and they get away with it, and they get away with it until the moment they don't. And in Herb's case, he picked the wrong guy. He picked a young man who had family that missed him and hired a private detective. And a lot of the credit for breaking the case goes to this man, a chap called Virgil Vandegrift, who knew how law enforcement worked. And as he started poking around, Virgil went to the same bars. He posted, "Have you seen this man?" posters of the victims, and started asking questions. And stories started to emerge of this guy, this Brian Smart, that was the last seen in the company of the men that had disappeared. And it wasn't long before Mr. Venegas started to suspect that a serial killer was working the gay bars of Indianapolis. So that alone caused the police did stake out the bars, they did listen to him, but Herb killed intermittently, so they weren't able to catch him in the act. Nobody saw him doing it. Finally, though, he let the victim live. And this victim went by the pseudonym of Tony Harris, and he managed to escape from Fox Hollow Farm, went to the police, told them that he'd been essentially attacked by this individual in a big old place, something, something farm. It had a big wooden sign outside, but I don't remember exactly what or where. So finally things started to point towards somebody very affluent that lived not too far from Indianapolis. And they ended up finally tracing Herb's car. They got a picture of this Brian Smart when he reappeared. They got a picture of his car license plate, traced it through the vehicle records, and found that it was registered to one Herbert Baumeister at Fox Hollow Farm. So now the detectives have him. They have their man, but they can't prove it. He lawyers up. He refuses to allow a search of his property. Yet, amazingly, he doesn't clean up the property.
yeah.
And finally, the cops get to Fox Hollow Farm. And when Herb is out, and his wife allows them access. And he goes out into the woods behind the farm. The cops go into the woods behind the farm. And they find not just hundreds, but thousands of bones and bone fragments. It's a boneyard going all the way out into the woods. So it's obvious that this is, you know, these are multiple men. I mean, some of the arms are handcuffed. You know, they show signs of trauma, of having been burned, of having been hacked up. So they're going to go arrest Herb, but when he hears of this, he gets tipped off. Herb makes a run for the border. He goes to Canada, crosses the border. He's napping. This is kind of interesting. He's napping under a bridge in his car, and somebody's knocking on his window. And he wakes up, and it's a Canadian mounted officer. And the mounted officer tells him, "Sir, you can't sleep here. It's not safe." So he drives away. He says, I'm on a vacation, just taking a safety nap." He drives away. On the back seat of his car was a box full of videotapes, old VHS tapes, which have never, ever shown up since. We don't know what happened to them. But Herb went to a beach in a state park near a lake, pulled out his dad's gun, which was a .357 Magnum that he nicknamed Dirty Harry, and he ate his favorite food in the world, a peanut butter and jelly sandwich, and then shot himself in the head. After writing a suicide note. Now, the suicide note took no responsibility for any murders, never mentioned any murders. He basically said that his business was failing, you know, and he had not been a great family man after all. He was kind of a failure. And he was now going to lay down and go to sleep, is how he put it, and shot himself in the head. At no point, though, did he ever allude to what he'd done to those poor men.
That is just wild.
Wow.
I can't believe that I haven't heard of this.
Sorry.
I'm a horror movie fanatic. I'm all about the horror films. My wife, in contrast to me, she's all about the real murders. And so I've watched a lot of shows, watched a lot of stuff with her, and I have never heard of this one, you know.
Well, you know, this gets crazier, because if you think about it, right, Herb Baumeister, if he'd actually stood his ground, if he'd been brazen enough, and he was a brazen man, if he had actually denied all knowledge and had said, "I have no idea how all these bones turned up in my backyard," he might actually have gotten away with it. He was never charged. No one was ever convicted of those murders. Even today, he is an alleged serial killer because he was never brought to trial. But right. The thing is that when you bury the body of a victim, there's a degree of preservation. So when it comes to the forensic side of things, it helps preserve the evidence. When you leave them out in the wind, rain, and snow for years, they kind of get scoured and sandblasted, you know?
Right.
So there may have been no DNA evidence at all to tie Herb Baumeister to those remains at all. He could possibly have gotten away with it.
Yeah. Well, it's funny that you said that he didn't clean up at all, because my wife and I, you know, you said, would your wife notice? You know, we've actually joked about how there's no way that I'm a serial killer, because, like, she'd come home from her trip and be all, "Chauncey, why is there a huge pile of blood on the kitchen floor?" And I'd be all, "Oh, yeah, I meant to clean that up." You know, because I wouldn't have gotten
it's
around.
It's been there for, like, a week.
Right, yeah. And so Well,
ever going to clean that viscera off the ceiling?
It's like, right. I'm wondering if he left the bones out there as part of his, you know, as part of his fetish, you know, that somehow helped tide him over. Because you said that he killed intermittently, I'm wondering if those bones were part of the fetish. I guess we don't know that, though.
He certainly got off on hiding in plain sight. And I don't know if you have the ability to incorporate a YouTube video into the show.
I do, yeah.
You should absolutely do this. I want you to actually see it. Because this is one of the most chilling things that I think you'll see in a long time.
The Indiana Department of Transportation maintains over 11,000 miles of roadway, and we paint those miles of roadway each year, and this is just an isolated incident that happened.
The drive-by is striking, you know, whatever.
Herb Baumeister of Carmel saw it all.
I said to my son, they're going to hit that raccoon with a spray gun, and sure enough, they just strike right over its face and neck. You know, didn't even move it, you know, no effort to, you know, get it out of the way. So I happen to have a Polaroid with me, so I took a shot of the thing.
A raccoon, which met its demise on the yellow line, became one with the paint. The raccoon has since been removed. This is all that's left.
This was just, you know, a painter should have had a chalk line drawn around his career by state officials. There was no excuse for that. I mean, the poor thing deserved a better fate than that.
Yeah, I'm back.
Okay.
Number one, Herb looks like everybody's, he looks like a bank manager, right?
Right.
He looks so ordinary, like the neighbor you could have and never be suspicious of.
Well, it took me a second. I kind of thought he was the news reporter. It took me a second
right.
to really understand
right.
what I was looking at, yeah.
So where he was standing, the fence behind him, that fence is the property fence, the property line for Fox Hollow Farm, okay? So a few hundred feet behind Herb and slightly off to one side, the bodies of how many but double digits victims that he put there are decomposing, and he's getting angry about a raccoon that got spray painted over.
Right.
Can you believe the front of this guy?
Yeah.
Right.
Because his concern was like about a job well done. It wasn't really.
Yeah.
It wasn't really about the animal.
How dare they? You know, this poor raccoon deserves so much better.
Yeah.
Right. That's what he says. And you've got the bodies of his victims festering. So that's the only that I'm aware of anyway, a video footage of Herb, and it was to complain about the body of a raccoon being treated disrespectfully. Imagine the kind of mindset of a man that can do that, knowing what's behind him. And I talked to the victim that escaped. He was kind enough to come back to Fox Hollow, and actually we interviewed him for the book, and he said based on his experience of Herb, he thought that Herb very much enjoyed the gloating aspect of, you know, you guys have no idea what's going on. Watch this hand, but you have no idea what the other hand is doing. Mm. But he actually got off on pulling a fast one on all the viewers that he would, you know, would get on his side from that footage. If you don't know what that, who that man is in the video, it's the dullest piece of footage on YouTube, right? But
right,
once
yeah.
you know the backstory, it's horrific.
Yeah, well, it makes sense that he sort of, because when you were first telling the situation with the pool and the mannequins, it led me to believe that he wanted an audience but knew it wasn't an option.
Yeah, and I was told that Herb used to refer to himself in the third person and that he'd come up with a backstory for most of these mannequins. They all had names, you know, and according to his so-called, the victim that got away, he actually said, the owner, Herb spoke of himself in the third person, and he said, the owner of Fox Hollow Farm does not like to be alone.
Hmm.
Hmm.
Yeah, that is just absolutely freaky. You know, it's really just weird to me that these things even exist. This might not be a question you're able to answer, but are serial killers, because during that time, through the 70s, through the 90s, we were really trying to, as a society, catch these guys, understand these guys. Has instances of serial killers per capita gone down, or has that really changed at all?
Well, serial killers, I've just written a book about them for Visible Ink Press, which is out next year. The biggest book I've ever written, 150,000 words on serial killers. So I spent
is that
a
the,
year...
On Dark Ground? No, no, no.
No, no, this book is not going to be released for another year.
Okay.
But I spent a year delving into this subject and looking at countless serial killers. They've always been with us, but one of the things that that I think has fueled the explosive growth is the media fascination with them.
For 50 years, House of Realty has provided experienced and effective advice to its real estate clients. Experts in residential, commercial, and investment property, we have the knowledge and tools to assist you with all of your real estate needs. Family owned and operated since 1965, we have been an active part of the Shasta County community for generations. Please call House of Realty today at 241-8300. A reputation for excellence since 1965.
I'm celebrating local heroes. Tune in the second Thursday each month at 6:05 p.m. right after the news for Heroes of the North State on North State Now. I'm Michelle Slade. During North State Now, we will speak with your neighbors, friends, family, and community members who give back, not to be recognized, but because it's the right thing to do. During these conversations, we will learn what truly makes our community and the people in it. Join me the second Thursday of each month at 6:05 p.m., right after the news, for Heroes of the North State on North State Now.
On Tuesday, December 6th, join cardiologist Dr. Mohammed Khan and Dr. Azeeb Khan for a lunch where you can learn about heart health. This event is hosted by Shasta Regional Medical Center. It's a free event and your opportunity to learn more about heart disease prevention. Lunch is provided at the Shasta Regional Medical Group in the Lassen Room at Shasta Regional Medical Center. Now, space is limited, so pre-register online right now at ShastaRegional.com.
For all of you who have served us, let us serve you. Veterans, police, firefighters, EMTs, and your families, please come join us on December 3rd for a servicemen's feast from 11 a.m. to 2 p.m. at the VFW Hall located at 3210 Center Street, Anderson, California. This is a free holiday lunch with all the fixings for you. Again, it's on December 3rd, 11 a.m. to 2 p.m. at the VFW Hall at 3210 Center Street, Anderson, California. Presented by Missing in America Project. Merry Christmas and Happy Holidays.
You're listening to Free Fire Radio, 96.5 FM, 1460 AM. You're listening to Radio Wasteland with Chauncey and Kara. Find all our shows and archives by visiting Radio Wasteland at radiowasteland.us.
All right, welcome back to Radio Wasteland and our guest, Richard Estep. We're talking about his book, The Horrors of Fox Hollow Farm, Unraveling the History and Hauntings of a Serial Killer's Home. You know, when I first heard the title of it, as soon as I read Fox Hollow, I'm just all, oh, that's pretty Lovecraftian. I like that. It, you know, it makes me think of Witch's Hollow, and which was actually August Derleth after Lovecraft's death, but Lovecraft's credited. And Fox Hollow, it's just like, you know, you see a place called Fox Hollow, and you're all like, oh, I know something shady went on there. So it's a perfect name to carry on a legacy, you know. So we, in the last segment, we covered the murders that went on there spanning years. And so since then, the house has a new history that's going along with it, that it just can't shake this, right?
Well, something that's very unique about Fox Hollow Farm is that most locations of serial murders are demolished once it comes to light what took place there. And I think rightfully so, you know. You don't want them becoming a shrine to the wrong sort of people. Mm-hmm. Right. But Fox Hollow was left on the market. Herb Baumeister's wife and children moved out. Quite understandably, they wanted to step out of the shadow of that place and the events. And, you know, she changed her name and they started their life over. And the house was infested with, just ironically enough, raccoons for a long time. And then it was finally purchased by a couple called Rob and Vicky Graves. No pun intended, that truly, his name truly is Rob Graves. And Rob is an expert on the Herb Baumeister murders. In addition to being a coroner, Rob lives in Herb Baumeister's house, sleeps in his bedroom, you know, bathes in his bath, and was intrigued by everything that happened at Fox Hollow. Initially, though, because they're what they like to call horse people, they were just looking for somewhere where they could race horses, you know, and Fox Hollow was not only this huge 17.5, 18-acre ranch, essentially, but it was going at quite the discount. And it was only when they did a viewing of the place, they turned up to walk around, and they realized they recognized it from the newsreels, and the realtor had to disclose, yeah, hey, a number of murders believed to have taken place at Fox Hollow, and the bodies were found in the woods.
And the realtor didn't tell them until they brought it up?
Well, I mean, you do have to disclose that.
Okay.
Yeah, they were told. Because, you know, it's the whole thing, right? If something looks too good to be true, it usually is. Yeah.
Right.
So there were a few murders.
Yeah, right? You don't get a house this size, an estate this size, at a discount without something being amiss.
Yeah, and totally. I mean, this guy was a coroner whose last name was Graves, so he had to expect some sort of serendipitousness to go on in his life beyond that.
But, you know, in history of murders, it could have been dry rot, so yeah, maybe they got off easy.
It's not asbestos, this is a little more serious.
Yeah, exactly.
But Rob wrote the section of the book on Herb Baumeister himself. He studied the man intensely. And so, you know, I'd heard about this place and heard it was supposedly haunted. As the story was told to me, Rob and Vicky were both very skeptical. They don't believe in ghosts, or they didn't believe in that kind of thing. So, you know, they knew there was a bit of a macabre history at their new home, but they said they could live with it, and pretty much they had no issue. They moved in and finally brought in a friend of theirs, a young guy called Joe LeBlanc, to be a lodger. Because they had a bunch of spare space, and, you know, it would help to have a little extra money coming in. And that's when things started to get really strange. Vicky Graves was coming home from work one day. Rob was on the roof doing some work on it. And Vicky's just standing there looking at the back of the house into the woods, and she saw a trespasser. Now, it's one of the things that they used to have issues with. Would be people that would, you know, come off the hiking trails and trespass on the property because of its reputation. And it was a young man in a red T-shirt. And she was just about to get Rob to go down and challenge him when she noticed that this young man's legs kind of weren't there. Just below his waist, his legs ended. He seemed to be walking literally in thin air. And as she watched, he walks into the woods and disappeared. You know, which is remarkable. Joe the lodger moved into the in-laws' apartment, which really it's just a set of extra living space that's bolted onto the side of the main farmhouse, and that's what Joe rented. Now, Joe began to have these terrible nightmares that he was being chased through the woods outside the farm. He could never see what, because he couldn't bring himself in the dream to turn around and look, but he got the sensation that he was running for his life from something. And one night, he's walking his dog down the driveway. Fox Hollow has a huge, huge driveway. It's longer than some streets. So he's walking his dog to the end of the driveway when all of a sudden his dog takes off, goes running into the woods. So Joe goes after it, thinking, you know, it's a rabbit, it's a squirrel, it's a raccoon, something the dog has gone after. And as he gets into the tree line, Joe sees this guy, this young man, in a red T-shirt, looking back at him. And then all of a sudden, the young man is not there anymore. He disappears. Now, they didn't compare notes, Joe and Vicky didn't compare notes until one night they're looking at some old video news footage, because Rob had gotten videotapes of the news coverage of the Baumeister murders, and they're just going through reviewing some of this footage, and the video footage was showing the faces of Herb Baumeister's victims, and at the same moment, both Vicky and Joe are out of their chair pointing at the screen saying, "That's the guy. That's the guy we saw in the woods."
Yeah, all right. Well, we're coming up on the end here. I want to be sure that we can tell people where they can get the book, The Horrors of Fox Hollow Farm, Unraveling the History and Hauntings of a Serial Killer's Home by Richard S. Stepp. Where's the best place for them to go buy this?
You can get it in your local bookstore, of course, if it's open at the moment, but you can certainly order it from Amazon, Barnes & Noble, or any of those retailers also.
And, sorry, go ahead, Karen.
Oh, and I was just going to say, you have another upcoming book here on Dark Ground, investigating the haunted Monroe House, yes?
Yeah, again in Indiana. I'm starting to do a lot of stuff out there. The Monroe House is an interesting location that I first heard about on a TV show called Paranormal Lockdown. And it's this house that reputedly has a dark history. One thing that's for sure is that bones, which turned out to be human, were found in a crawl space beneath the house, and they are as yet unidentified. We don't know whose they are. Yeah. So I finished my paranormal investigation at the Monroe House last year, and I'm finishing the book now. That should be out in August.
All right.
We'll and have then to talk to you one, about it then.
Then let's recap the one that's coming out a year out from now.
So that book, the as-yet-to-be-titled Serial Killer Project, is by Visible Ink Press, and should be out round about now-ish, if not slightly earlier, in 2021. Should come back and talk to you guys when it's released.
Hope so. And if my vote counts, I'm going to vote for you to title it the as-yet-to-be-named Serial Killer Project.
Stranger things have happened.
Right. It'd be nice if you came back and talked to us about On Dark Ground, too. Man, this has been really interesting.
Yeah, crazy really stuff.
We deal with a lot of paranormal and stuff like that, and every once in a while we get these ones that are heavily rooted in reality, and man, I just find...
Yeah, we don't talk about serial killers on this show that often.
Yeah.
Usually when there's just a paranormal angle, but it's
weird, you know. I've always been the haunted healthcare guy. I do the show Haunted Hospitals, and I became known for writing about that because I'm a medical professional. But I had this string of kind of murder haunting cases. So I wrote a book called Gacy's Ghost about the spirit of John Wayne Gacy haunting a movie theater in a small town in Auburn, Illinois. I've done that. I'm writing a book out later this year about the Villisca Axe Murder House and my investigation of that particular haunting. And then there was Fox Hollow. So it's just been a run of a Venn diagram of where the paranormal meets true crime.
Yeah.
Yeah. Well, it's fascinating stuff.
My wife keeps hoping for me to find a haunted beach somewhere, but it's
just yeah, totally.
The swimming pool might be the best.
Right. Yeah. Yeah, tell her you know one with a swimming pool. All right, you've been listening to Richard Estep here on Radio Wasteland talking about his book, The Horrors of Fox Hollow Farm, Unraveling the History and Hauntings of its Serial Killer's Home. You can find that in your local bookstore or online, Amazon, Barnes & Noble, you know all those places. Thank you for being on the show.
Thank you for having me.
Tracy Edwards, CEO of the Reading Rancheria. Giving back to our local community is a tradition that is firmly rooted in our history.
Axiom Repertory Theater wants to thank the Rancheria for their generous grant to help support the arts and our theater in the community. Thank you so much for being a wonderful partner.
Hey, from all of us at Riddick Sports Club, we want to thank Reading Rancheria for all that you guys do for the community and for helping us out. Thanks a lot.
Thank you.
The news from Town Hall is brought to you on KCNR Shasta Reading by Shasta Regional Medical Center. Your life, your health, your choice. Shasta Regional Medical Center.